Hello, and welcome to Sobercast. We provide AA speaker meetings and workshops in a podcast format. We are an ad-free podcast, and if you enjoy listening, please help us be self-supporting by visiting Sobercast.com, look for the donate link, and drop a dollar or two into the virtual basket. Also, if you're a member of NA or have friends that are, please tell them about our other podcast, NAPOD. NAPOD features NA speakers and workshops in the same format as Sobercast. We upload a new speaker every day, and it's easy to subscribe by searching for NAPOD, N-A-P-O-D, all one word, on any podcast player app, or go to napod.xyz if you'd like to listen online. Hope you enjoy the podcast, and have a great day.
Pleasure. Our speaker tonight, Eddie C. from Glendora.
Good evening. My name is Ed, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Ed.
Where is Glendora? Yeah, I know. Everybody says, where is Glendora? I don't even know where it is. Don't even know where it is myself, for sure. I'd like to say both for my wife and myself that it's a privilege. It really is a privilege. I've been sober just long enough to realize that to be asked anywhere is a privilege. I haven't been sober long enough to be anything more than just a privilege to come up to your beautiful country. I've heard rumors down in Southern California that this is God's country. I don't know if it's true or not. But I do know that it's beautiful, and the only thing I have found that exceeds the beauty of your area of Oregon is the sober alcoholics that are here. That is more beautiful. And I'm glad that I'm one from Southern California. I'm a sober alcoholic, and that's really all I am. I've been sober so long now that I know one thing that nobody knows unless they've been sober longer than I have, and that's that I don't know a damn thing. I don't know. We got a lot of smart people in AA, but I'm not one of them. All I know is if I hadn't met you, I'd have died. You know, I would have died. And because I met you, I'm alive. And if you hadn't met me, you'd still all be alive. You know what I mean? So I'm glad that I'm here. I'm here because it's a privilege. It's a privilege to share what has happened to me, and what has happened to me can't be told. I found a word in the English language that I like that describes Alcoholics Anonymous the best. It's called ineffable. And the word ineffable, I found out, really means you just can't explain it. You got to do it. And I kind of like that, you know. And if you're new here tonight, you got to remember that I'm an alcoholic, but I don't look like one. You know what I mean? Well, that's not funny, because when I looked like one, I wasn't one. You know what I mean? I have a disease that no one has. And the reason no one has it is because nobody's that bad. It reminds me of the gal talking to another gal, and she said, I heard your husband died. She said, that's right. She said, what'd he die of? She said, he died of alcoholism. She said, did he go to AA? She said, oh, no, he wasn't that bad. And I think that's bad. I don't know. Now, I don't know about any of you, but I never knew the day before I got here what the problem was. I never was smart enough to figure that out anyway. Very difficult to get any objectivity looking in a bowl, I'm telling you. Never did have much objectivity. And I discovered I was alcoholic by getting sober, which is a funny way to find out you're alcoholic. Because when I was drinking, I never knew it was. And now that I'm alcoholic, they go around asking me from time to time to share in various places. And I'm always reminded of the fact that I don't look like one, you know, because I don't even know what the heck they look like. I can't tell the Al-Anons from the AAs here tonight. I don't know who they are, you know. And I don't know who's going to get sober, and I don't know who's going to get drunk. I can't get anybody sober, and I can't get anybody drunk. You know, I can't even get me sober, you know. So, I mean, I don't know anything. All I know is that I've been experiencing a miracle ever since I got here, something I've been looking for. There are some of us in life who honestly feel, I guess from the day we're born, that there's a little bit more than what's being offered. So we are looking for more than there is. Now, I've always done that. And if you look for more than there is, and if you're anything like me, that keeps you tired all the time. You know what I mean? Because there's never enough. Remember the song, Is That All There Is? God, I used to love that. Didn't make me so there was a new romance, a car, a suit of clothes. It didn't mean anything. Is that all there is? So I've always been looking for something more than there is. My sponsor, who happens to be the water walker, some of you know him from Laguna Beach. Don't laugh, I think he can do it. I mean, I really think he can. But he told me a long time ago, he said, Ed, it's an inside job. He said, the program has to go where the booze did. You know, it's an inside job. It has nothing to do with that. And as I was riding with him in his brand new Lincoln, I said, yeah, I understand. He dropped me off to my Volkswagen. But it is an inside job. When I was a little kid, didn't have any problems. You know, being a little kid is no problem at all. You don't know whether you're blue, you don't know whether you're green, you don't know whether you're tall or short, ugly or handsome, you don't know whether you're smart or dumb. You know, it's just run around and eat peanut butter sandwiches. And then society has a way of giving you those mystical qualities that are really something to alcoholics. One of my favorites, Tooth Fairy. Love the Tooth Fairy, you know. And then, of course, there's a few others. There's the Easter Bunny Rabbit, and then there's the big fat man that comes down the chimney at Christmas time. But my favorite was Tinkerbell. That's an alcoholic's dream. You don't have to be nothing, just there you are. There you are. You know. Who has to walk around with a big nose and carrot top hair and liver lips? Well, all you got to do is be sprinkled. There you are, you know. When I was a little kid, I was given all these fantasies. And I have a saying that once you gave me wings to fly, and then as I got older, you took away my sky. You told me I couldn't do this and couldn't do that, and I couldn't do this and I couldn't do that. My mother died of alcoholism, you know, on a floor with cirrhosis of the liver. And yet she told me I couldn't talk with my mouth full. You know what I mean? So I got a funny set of values. Mom's dying on the floor, but I can't talk with my mouth full. You know what I mean? And she told me about the fat man coming down the chimney and all that kind of stuff. And then little by little, they told me that wasn't true. And then I started discovering that this is a world where I'm different. You know, all the men, all the good-looking men are 6'1". They got curly black hair. You know, they all look like Tyrone Power. Of course, I've had to update that. Robert Redford, you know. And I don't look like that. Never did, you know. I everybody was good-looking, had beautiful black curly hair. Of course, I find guys my age now that had it, they don't have no hair. You know, I still got mine, baby. I got mine. You know, I'm glad you had black hair when you were a kid. I don't know why. Go to show you, we envy that we don't know what we're envying. When we really what we need to live a beautiful life we have all the time, don't even know we got it. You know what I mean? Like a guy once said, we curse God in the sky, you know, for having nothing, and we have a gold mine, and we're walking around with it all the time, don't even know we got it. How the heck are you going to know that, you know? And I think that's why that guys like me are such a victim. And I say, and my wife said this morning this afternoon, there's some of us who need a drink long before we ever have one. You know what I mean? Or plastic surgery or something. When you're sober and you feel like Quasimodo coming down out of the tower, you need a drink. You know what I mean? You need something. So I don't know what you got out of booze, and I still work under the principle that the more something does for you, the more it'll do to you. If it don't do a hell of a lot for you, you know, like if you can drink a half a martini and leave it and go on about your business, then you ain't one of us, you know what I mean? You know, if I drink a half a martini, I don't do anything else, you know. Little record said, let's have a drink, 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 you know. And I come up off the floor, oh, let's have a drink, you know what I mean? Just never stops. But when I was a kid, I found the magic again, you know. And I got to have some magic. I got to have some magic in my life. I just can't live in this life wondering what General Motors is going to do. That doesn't care. Who's going to be the next president? I don't care, really. I never see any difference. It always seems to be the same thing, you know. The ones that have it all, and the ones that don't have anything have less, you know what I mean? And it doesn't seem to change. The only thing that interests me is how do I feel, you know. And I'm a great one. I'm obsessed with how do I feel. And I discovered as a little kid, you know, and I'm a social drinker from the word go. I drank a half a gallon of wine on my first setting, Ernest and Julio, which is a couple of Italians down our way, and got smashed, you know. I wet my drawers, you know. I regurgitated. I used to say puke, but I don't do that anymore. I fell down and I went to jail the first time I ever drank. You want to know what happened the last time I ever drank? That's right, same thing. Which means you never learn how, right? Those that know how don't have to learn, and those who can't never will learn. I don't know. You ever watch people who can drink? People who really can drink rarely ever do. People who can't drink, that's all they do. See, Norm Malphy was here last year, and I'm too slow for you. That lady in Arkansas one time said, what the hell did he say? You know. She said, what did he say? I said, play it at 78, lady, you know. Oh, that's what he said. That's really, really, really wild about AA's. You know, the one thing I love about AA, anybody that stays sober any period of time, becomes a completely different individual. That's what's so beautiful about our program. None of us are the same, you know. We all look the same when we come in. But we all become ourselves, whatever that may be. And God, wonderful. That's really wonderful. But I discovered right away in alcohol, you know, that's something, you know. I got good looking. I mean, I got devilishly looking, you know. As a matter of fact, you can't describe this to a normsy. And, you know, normsy wives, for instance, don't understand what we're doing out there all the time. They really don't understand. They think we're out carousing around, taking women to motels. We go to a motel, we used to go by ourselves. Economics, you know what I mean. But there's something about this need for alcohol. And I found it early because it made me good looking. You know, my nose shrunk. My hair was no longer carrot top. I didn't have liver lips. I looked more like Robert Redford. Now, the thing in the big book, you know what it says in the big book? Learn to control and enjoy. Learn to control and enjoy. And how many of you, when you were first starting to drink, we didn't have any trouble, so you did have some trouble, but wasn't it worth it? You know? I like my friend. I got a friend named Old Taylor down our way. He always says the first time he drank, same thing happened to him. He woke up dying the next morning, locked up in juvenile hall, same as I did. And the first thing he thought is he could hardly wait to go do it again. Go do it again, you know what I mean? And I'm one of those kind of guys that all the pimples dropped off of my first drink. Just boom, they were all gone. And I come from a family, you know, I was talking about don't do this and don't do that. I remember my mother saying, you better stop that, you'll go blind, you know. And you notice I wear glasses. Just in time. I found it just in time. They're always telling you don't do anything, you know. Don't do this, don't do that. Anything that's fun, don't do it. Don't do it. You know what I mean? When you're drinking, you know, you get that something, you know. You can kind of do what you want. Even though you can't do anything, you know you could if you could. There's something about being alcoholic and knowing you could even if you don't. Then to be sober and try to do it, no, you can't. And you got to explain that to the normsies. You know, it's like my old friend Eddie Regan used to say, there ain't nothing in this world more exciting than getting a half a gallon of Red Mountain, locking yourself in a room and having a time all night. Now, you got to be a wino to understand that one. That's the height of something, you know. If heaven's any better than this, man, it's got to be something, you know. So somewhere along the line, you know, and I'm one of those weirdos. You got to remember, when I first came to AA, I was not like anybody else. I really wasn't. I mean, I really wasn't. Everybody I met in Alcoholics Anonymous when I first got here were boozers. They drank booze, bourbon, gin, vodka, whatever the case. But I'm a grasshead. I smoked them funny cigarettes. Oh, I love smoking them funny cigarettes, dropping them funny pills and all that kind of stuff, you know. And when I got here, people didn't understand what the hell I was talking about. I didn't understand them either, you know what I mean? I was here 2 years and still saying Anonymity, you know. Anonymity? Oh, I don't know, something like that. But I used to use words like uppers. They thought I meant teeth, you know. I remember one time saying something about dropping reds, and this old gal said, were you in Vietnam? You know. We didn't communicate. Now, if you can picture me when I was 20 years old, I want to give you a picture of me. I weighed about 117 pounds, which means I got an elongated head, right? When I got sober, I asked my mother why she didn't have a cesarean, you know. I mean, so I'd have had a round head like everybody else. But I had a DA hairdo, which accentuated my long face. As a matter of fact, John Carradine would have stared at me, you know. Horses used to stare, you know, one of them kind of things. And I wore pants up to here. I mean, really, up to here. And I had zipper at least a foot and a half long. And I find out that the inadequate have a tendency to compensate for feelings of inadequacy. My sponsor said that's overcompensation. I don't know. I've got a two-car garage, and I got a Volkswagen. I don't know. I'm still doing it, I guess. I don't know what that means, but I guess all right. But for some strange reason, from the very, 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 very beginning, I found myself with the thing that I think that a person needs, even though it's synthetic. You know, a friend of mine says alcohol for some of us is a spiritual experience until we find the real thing. It gives us that feeling on the inside when things aren't the way they're supposed to be that everything's all right. That's a kind of a spiritual experience. There is no greater spiritual experience than to know deep down on the inside that everything's all right. Regardless of what's going down anywhere, that it really is all right, it's not going to get better, it is. And alcohol can do that just like that. And you smoke a few of them funny cigarettes and get cool, and you learn to call your mother man, then they know you're hip. See? I always called my mother man. Sometimes man. And you end all sentences and you know. You can always tell us, dudes. We talk like this. Hey, man, you know. Hey, man, you know. First time I ever talked in AA in Burbank, I got up and said, hey, man, you know, man, you know, you know, man, you know. Hey, man, you know. Some guy in the back said, what in the hell are you saying? I said, you know, man, you know, you know. They say that depressing drugs damage your brain, but what if you don't have one to start with? You know? Albert Einstein would have had a damaged brain, you know. I'm an idiot that got squashed to nothing, really. Absolutely nothing. And I got cool, man. I got cool. Double hip slick, man. I got cool. You can always tell a cool dude. He stares. I find out now it's catatonia. I didn't know that. Stare. Matter of fact, one day I was asked to talk at one of the mental institutions down there. A bunch of catatonics. I didn't know there was one. But hey, what you dudes say, man? And catch staring at the wall. You know what I mean? But that was my idea of being cool at one time, you know? And any of you younger people that have smoked them funny cigarettes and taken that, and they got all kinds of things I never tried, like PCP, makes you strong, you break your arms, and you don't even know you're doing it, you know? Kind of stuff. I never had any of that LSD, you know, all that kind of, but I had what there was. And I'll tell you one thing, you get here a lot younger. You take the express nonstop. As a matter of fact, there's a little gal who lives over in West Los Angeles that came out of Venice when she was 13. A street bum, rap, you know, pickpocket, steel shoes, and all that kind of stuff. 13 years of age. She just got an M.A. from UCLA. She's about 21, 22, been sober all that time. I saw her at a meeting the other night, and I said, if you want to believe in miracles, I'd just take another look at this one, you know what I mean? Just some unbelievable thing. Well, I was kind of that kind of a person. I wasn't anywhere, you know? And yet I got involved in the things that are supposed to be called living. Now, you can't live when you're obsessed, you know, and no one knows they have an obsession until they it's gone. Then I know. I never knew I had an obsession. All I knew is what I got is my head. My head says, let's drink, so we go drink. So I think it's my idea. And I find out when the obsession's gone, it wasn't my idea. You know, like today, my wife said it again today. I don't go places today that I don't want to go. I don't associate with people I don't want to be with, you know, but I did then and thought it was cool, man, you know. Getting cool, smoking them funny cigarettes, and doing all them funny things. And people say to me today, you know, because there's a lot of grass going around. You know, I mean, a lot of people have been smoking grass today. They didn't used to. It used to be only for us cool dudes, man, you know. Just us cool dudes. You're either a musician or you ran with one, or you didn't smoke grass. You know, and you talked that talk, you walked that walk, you were cool. You got D.A. hairdo and pants up to here, man. And you, hey, what's happening? You know, you were cool. You know what I mean? You were cool. And people ask me today, does marijuana hurt you? You know, I don't think so, you know. You know, the reason I say that, oh, well, maybe bushes follow you down the street, little things like that. You know, or maybe you leave a football game because the quarterback assembles the team and talks about you, but no. I have since discovered that the only constant state of euphoria would have to be a lobectomy, and I don't want one of them. You know. That every time I go up, I can even do that. I used to do that the first 10 or 15 years I was in AA. You know, I go to a convention and come back, way about Wednesday. Oh, God damn, you know. Couldn't figure out what it was. You get high, you got to come down. And people say marijuana's not a habit for me. Of course it's not. I can prove it. I smoked it every day for 10 years. Now, if it was in this generation, I'd have me a marijuana belt buckle, but they didn't have them in those days, you know. And we used to wear jeans in those days with holes in the knees because we were poor. Today it means cool, you know what I mean? I saw a dude walk down the street the other day with a full set of coveralls on. This cat was just far out, man, you know. I can remember when we used to think he was a little Abner. So you say the cool does change, doesn't it, you know? And I found out from a newcomer last week, I said, what do you mean by cool? He said, man, I was getting cold when I got here. And I was cool when I got here. But I tried to be married. You know, you can't be married and be obsessive. You know, I learned from the Al-Anon people that it's not that the alcoholic doesn't love his wife or his children. He don't have time. He ain't doing anything, but he's busy. When the eyeballs are in backwards and you're watching nerves and muscles and heart stopping and feelings and you take something because of how you feel and then you take something for what you took, you're busy. And if you keep it up, you develop a physiological addiction to it. You know, then there's withdrawals. With any depressant drug, you got to withdraw from if you take it long enough. And I used to get to the point that, and I say, still say today, if you can thread a sewing machine when it's running, you need a drink. You know. And I could do it. I could do it. But I never knew what was wrong. And I still say that if, that, you know, I'm so gosh darn glad I'm an alcoholic. Because how would I explain having wet pants all the time? A guy that has wet pants that is an alcoholic should at least see his urologist. I mean, how are you going to explain to somebody? You leave the house on Monday to get a loaf of bread and come back on Thursday. And then somebody says, where have you been? You don't know either. You don't. People say, do you have blackouts? I used to have weakouts. I was so dumb when I got here. People said, do you have any blackouts? I said, I don't remember. Now, that's how dumb I am. Yeah. And even dumber than that, you know, because I'm not an egghead, but they used to say to me, are you agnostic? And I said, I don't know. And I found out later that's what it means. You know. So you can see you're not getting anybody brilliant up here, you know. There's no way. You know. The one thing I love about Alcoholics Anonymous is that it does what drugs and alcohol promise. I get better. But if you're new and you're a drug addict or use a lot of booze, and if you're like me, you're wondering, where do you put it? Somebody hands you a big book. You want to cook it up. You know, it's got to be put inside somehow, somewhere. Give it away. You know, what kind of nonsense is this? You know. I want to tell you, I got tired quick. And my wife had kids. You know. I think they're mine. They look something like me. But she had kids. And, you know, responsibility is all right for the responsible. You know, and I'm not irresponsible. I'm an alcoholic. I'm busy. You know what I mean? When I got sober, you know what I found out I really was? A little kid with an old face. That's what I was. You can always tell us we want what we want when we want it, and we want it right now. And we're always right. If you don't like it, bitch, get your ass out. Oh, she left me. I had a baby of mine kept telling his wife, get your ass out, get your ass out. One day she left. He said, she's gone. I said, she surprised you, didn't she? You didn't know what let go and let God meant, I guess. I was tired by the time I was 30. I was tired. I was tired. I mean, you're going to get so tired. That's all. I was tired. I had so much fun, I didn't know what it was. I was just plain tired. Now, I did not know. If you're new here, I did not know I was alcoholic. I did not know. Nothing is sicker than a sick mind trying to figure out itself. And that's sick, man. You know, it's like an ant looking through a microscope at itself. Can't do it. If it lays on the glass, it can't see. If it's looking, it's not there. You know what I mean? I never could figure it out. I never knew. Matter of fact, if I had known in advance that Alcoholics Anonymous was promising me sobriety, God almighty, that means hemorrhoids, halitosis, going around being good, and not having any fun. You know what I mean? You know, I didn't know that's what you were selling. I didn't know that's what... I had no idea. All I know is that one day I came home not knowing where I was, and my first wife was there, and she knew what the problem was. She finally figured it out. Somebody told him, that dude's an alcoholic. And I'm sure that she must have said what most women would say. Oh, he drinks a lot, but he's not an alcoholic. I'm an alcoholic. Now, she didn't tell me that, but at the right time, when I said to her on that last time I came home, I said, I'll do anything. She laid that little card in my hand. It had two letters on it, AA. I had no idea. Now, I knew about ancient age. I knew about that. And I said, what's that? She said, Alcoholics Anonymous. I had never heard of it. She said, it's a place where people get together, something like that. She gave me that little card. Now, I would like to say that I ran right down and called them, but when I drink, I got to die. I always die, you know. I'm always hearing, Eddie, you know, noises. You know, I had a guy call me about 10 years ago from North Hollywood. I'd been working with this guy, and I really did a wonderful thing. I really got this guy, really. But he got to drinking again, you know, in spite of what I told him. He drank anyway, right? He called me on the phone. I'll never forget it. He called me on the phone. He says, Ed, you got to get over here. You got to get over here. I said, why? He said, there are little men running around the room, about 3 foot tall. I said, one of them got a green hat and a red feather? He said, yeah. I said, I know that dude. Then he said, but that's not the problem. He said, their mouths are going, no sound. I said, are you taking any pills? He said, no. I said, take pills, you get some. Well, matter of fact, my wife's going to write a book called He Died by Prescription or something like that, which is really true. Now, you know, a guy showed up, and, you know, I mean, Alcoholics Anonymous is so, you know, so non-professional. I mean, you call up IBM, they run it through machines, and you don't send ding-dongs out on doctors, you know, blacks out on blues. You send, get a doctor on a doctor, and be sure you match them up, you know, baseball player with a baseball player. Make sure you get it all straight, you know what I mean? But they don't do that in AA. They just send men out on men and women out on women, for obvious reasons. You know what I mean? Something gets in the way if you try to do it the other way, you know what I mean? And I won't say it. I just had to cut that one out. But for some strange reason, this guy that showed up was a real, you know, yup type of dude, you know, one of them kind of guys. You know, he still had cakes in his back of his ears and old coveralls on. And the guy's still sober. I talked in Burbank about a year ago, and he was sitting there, a little gray-haired old man. I could brought tears to my eyes. That was a guy that knocked on my door. Now, he did not understand me. You remember a picture one time that the guy played in where he kept saying, he said, we got trouble here with communication. That's what it is, you know. And that's what we were having. We didn't communicate at all because he used words like house and I used words like pad. He used words like woman or lady or I used words like chick, you know. And he left and I split, you know, that kind of stuff. We didn't communicate, you know what I mean? He didn't stay very long. And he laid a little card on me and split and says, we're having a meeting in Burbank on Friday night. Hope you can make it. We got an excellent speaker. Now, he took off. I think he spun his wheels. Because, you know, and I told him years later, I said to him, I wasn't that bad. He said, you were worse. I'm sitting laying there on the floor with the same pair of pants. Now my zipper's rusty, okay? If you have that problem, a little soap will take care of it, I found out. I don't know, you know, I don't know. But you know that I haven't had a drink since that day, and that was December the 2nd, 1951. And I don't like being sober. And the miracle is I don't like being sober, never have. Couldn't stand it. I mean, you've got to give me something. There's certainly some pharmaceutical house somewhere that's making something that'll make everything all right. Take one every 4 hours. The only problem is I turn the bottle upside down and it says take 4 every hour. Or take the whole bottle in 4 hours, you know, something like that. I can't believe it, you know what I mean? And I say to any of you that are new here, if you don't like sobriety, I know why you don't like it. You never experienced it. You've experienced periods between not drinking. I'm not drinking, you know, the judge said he put me in jail. That's not sobriety, man. Sobriety is, hey, baby, this is good. You know what I mean? This is fun. I mean, this is far out. How do you explain feeling good to a cop when you haven't had anything? Remember one night I was going over to a place over in Whittier to talk at some meeting. I had a nice little sports car and I was driving over there. Driving too fast enough. California Highway Patrolman pulled me over and he said, nice little car you have here. I thought I'd lay it on him. I said, I'm the speaker up here at the AA meeting. He said, wonderful work. Sign here. You know, never been back to the art gallery since. But it's amazing, you know, I showed up at that first meeting. Now, you know, I know that there are principles before personality. I'm convinced of that. I'm absolutely convinced that there are principles before personalities. But Alcoholics Anonymous has a way of developing the real personality. And there are personalities in AA that I can't find any place else in the world. I mean, and one of them happened to be the guy that I heard at my first meeting, who happens to be my sponsor, Mr. Water Walker himself, you know. Now, you can imagine, here's a guy that's intellectual, here's a guy who can make money just standing on his fingers, you know. Here's a guy that's good-looking, tall, virile, he's got all them things. Here's old me, huh? And he speaks English, you know, and I speak gibberish. And I'm not thinking too good. I'm not thinking too good at all. And this guy gets up there. Now, the only thing I know is that my first meeting, he laughed a lot, and I couldn't figure out why. I kept looking around. I kept wondering, what the hell's going on here? And he kept laughing. The lady alongside him, he's like, what's going on here? And then pretty soon, he started crying. Big tears. Grown man standing up. The tears run down his eyes. Little lady on my right was crying. And I kept thinking to myself, what the hell's going on here? And then he said, it's terrific. And I said, that's it. He's loaded. He's loaded. That's it. I know it. You don't feel that good unless you got it going, man. You got it going. You see, I was attracted to you. I have a baby who says this: you don't have to want what we have, man. All you got to do is not want what you have, man. You don't know what we got. Don't tell me you're brand new and you know what we got. You don't have that kind of insight, man. We hardly know what we got ourselves because it keeps changing all the time. But I mean, how can you explain the miraculous experiences in Alcoholics Anonymous? You know, how can you explain it to anybody? You just can't do it. I never met anybody in AA in all the years I've been here who can tell you what this thing is all about, because they've only experienced part of it. Guarantee, if you've been here less than I have, there's more to come, I guarantee you. You know what I mean? And the funny thing about it is, from that first meeting until this one, things have been happening to me. Now, my first impression was, it's going to be, whee! I'm sober. Hi, good morning, God. Here's your kid. If I'd have done that within a year, they'd have had me at Camarillo, you know, which is one of our funny farms. You know what I mean? I had no idea, but at least I was motivated because I figured the people were taking something. And in the early days, I was told this was a program designed in such a way that I would find within myself what it was I'd been looking for. I didn't even know I was looking for it. That the real me would slowly emerge. And I was one of those guys. I was talking to a friend of mine named Mike R. that's been sober about 32 years. And we agreed the other day that one of the reasons we've been here so long is that we're not one of those super sensational people. We were given slow grow, man. You've ever been up in Northern California? They got trees up there, and you can live alongside one of them trees from the day that you live there until the day you die, and you'll never see that dude grow. And you'll think, how the hell did he get so big? Slow grow. That's what I got, slow grow. You know how you stay around AA a long, long, long time? Is that you realize that you never arrive. You know, you're just into today, you know. And I learned early in Alcoholics Anonymous that this program was designed in such a way to teach me to live with me. Now, I don't even know what me is. I haven't the slightest idea what me is. I find out that there are so many facades. And I remember the first time I was asked to talk at North Hollywood on Thursday night. That's where they got a place for you to park your car. Just speaker, so you know you're big. You know what I mean? And I remember talking there at North Hollywood the first time. I got about a year's sobriety. And, you know, I was arriving, you know what I mean? Me and Chuck going to walk Catalina just any day now, you know what I mean? Look, I'm doing wet lawns pretty good. Don't laugh. And I got up there, and by then I'd learned a couple of words in English. You know, and that makes you dangerous. I remember getting up there saying, now that I got rid of my facade, and some guy way in the back said, it's facade. I proved to him after the meeting that it was facade. You know what I mean? But for some reason, Alcoholics Anonymous from the very, very beginning became something of a great interest to me. Now, I realize now, as I look back over all the years I've been here, that there are some of us who follow, you know, we don't know what we're doing. There are people in AA that that precede us that we emulate. And there are different kinds of people. And people are different philosophies in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I find out that I've always emulated the people in AA who express this joy. You know what I mean? And I know people in AA that have got joy. And I've always kind of followed them around when I was new. Whenever they were anywhere, I was sitting there in the front row saying, oh boy, I got me some more joy. Whatever it was I got. And I didn't even know what the heck I was getting. Because in the early days in Alcoholics Anonymous, I didn't know what was going on. They took me here, and they took me there, and they took me to road camps. And one day I remember they took me to a road camp way out on Malibu Canyon. It was called Camp 6 then. And I was riding with a guy named Jack P., who was about 9 foot tall, and he was so tall that he used to have to stoop over. And the guy named Eddie, who's passed away in Florida. And Eddie had a car that had, you know, was in really a ratty shape. You know, you had to say the Serenity Prayer to get in it all together, hands held, you know what I'm kind of saying? But Eddie didn't know any better, and we were going out to this camp, and every once in a while he'd run this car up against the curb. And so big old Jack would say to him, why do you put this car up against the curb? He said, we don't have any brakes. And Jack said, you're crazy. Eddie said, you don't have no faith. We got there, you know what I mean? But when we got out to this camp out there, I'm brand new, and then when I first got sober, they always said things like, newcomer, shut your mouth. If it's open, you're lying. Put your hand down, punk. And I thought they were never going to let me say a word. 6 months, and I'm, get your hand down, punk. So I'm out to this road camp, and one of the guys leading, his name was Jimmy, said, we got a new fellow with us doing a fine job. Eddie, come on up here. And I said, oh, my God. I've never done anything like this. I'm scared to death. You know, I got inadequacies. You know, I could miss it by about 9 syllables, but I'd blade it on them, you know what I mean? And I remember I looked over at Jimmy, my friend, and I said, Jim, what'll I say? He said, why don't you tell him what happened to you? And so I did. I got up there and I told these dudes, I gave them a blow by blow you never believe. Bottle by bottle, court by court, corner by corner, and dates. You know. And when the thing was all over, there was only one guy in the front row. Well, don't laugh. I said, how come you're here? He said, hell, I'm the next speaker. But I discovered something that night. They didn't know what happened to me, but I did. And I said, on the way home, it's terrific. Didn't know what it was, but it's terrific. Because there's some kind of magic here. I look for magic, you know. Always looking for magic. Now, the thing that I know, and the one thing that I've experienced here in Alcoholics Anonymous, that's all anyone knows, I think, here on this whole planet, you know, is that what we experience. And that's valid here. What we experience on the inside, we must share, we must give away, you know what I mean? And a man that I just loved, him so much, never saw him as often as I'd love to, but he was a Superior Court judge down our way up in the northern part of the middle part of the state. And he got killed in an airplane crash here about a month and a half ago. And he always said something that every time he said it, I knew that it was true. I knew that it was true. He said that an alcoholic has been given a special privilege from God. And he said, inasmuch as that one alcoholic talking to another alcoholic, a healing process starts that couldn't start any other way. Mainly for the one who's doing the giving, not for the one who's getting. Because the one who's getting won't get it until he gives it away. And it's a legacy that's passed on one to the other. And he used to just run through my mind as that's what it's all about. But those of us who happen to be self-centered, preoccupied, looking for omnipotence, we're all wrapped up in ourselves all the time with our own importance and don't even know anything about anybody else. When we're giving, we're not giving. Giving is from the heart. And I realize now, how would you like to be, say, like 40 years of age and find out that you know nothing about the most important thing there is to be on this planet? All I had was mouth, but I didn't know how to love. I didn't know. I've been to a couple motels. But I find out there's a difference between love and lust. I knew nothing about love. Now, it's very difficult for a man to admit to himself he don't know how to love. And I did not know how to love. Now, I knew I cared because people died. And it didn't really affect me. I said, well, gee, gosh, what, whatever. But I didn't feel it. I didn't feel it. And last year, when Eddie, our friend Eddie, you know, I didn't know how much I loved Eddie. I had no idea how much I loved Eddie until I was talking at a Narcotics Anonymous meeting in Venice. And a guy came up to me and he said, hey, they found Eddie at home dead. I said, Eddie, my God, I don't believe it. But it didn't really get to me until the next day. And the next day, all of a sudden, I was driving a car and I almost had to stop because I got to sobbing and I couldn't stop and I couldn't figure out what it was. It never happened before in my life. So what do? I call my sponsor down in Laguna Beach. I said, oh, I don't understand this. I just can't stop. I keep sobbing and crying. He said, Ed, you got grief, huh? You got a little grief? And I said, is that what it is? He said, yeah, that's grief. He said, that's because you have learned to love. And I didn't know I knew how. Never knew I knew how. The first time I ever had the experience was that I remember making a 12-step call. I was sitting in a clubhouse one day, you know, warm bodies in Glendale in those days at the Ilano Club. That's who went, you know, and we were some dinghies there, so they sent the three of us, you know. And we were really sophisticated in those days. We always took Carol syrup with us, and we gave it to the diabetics. We didn't know any better. You know what I mean? We had a big book we quoted from, you know. We always had one guy that could quote the book, one of them kind, you know. And we went down there, and we went into this place, and this was the most sickening thing I'd ever seen, even for a drunk like me. It was a mess. Cigarette butts, bottles, and defecate and urinate, the whole work, everything was there. This was a sickening place. We had to hold our nose to talk to the guy. So we took turns. Well, about 3 or 4 days later, we got that dude at a meeting. Bald-headed, he didn't have a hair on his head, you know. And I happened to be in the Ilano Club on a Friday night in Glendale, the old 109A Club. And that guy was taking a cake. And one of the three of us that went down there was his sponsor. He was giving it to him. And this guy was crying. And the guy that he was giving it to him was crying. I'm sitting there crying, too. And he said something like this. He said, if it wasn't for those three guys right there. I was one of them he pointed to. He said, I'd have been dead. And then he was crying. You know what I mean? And then I found out I was crying. And all of a sudden, I thought to myself, I'll be darned. I love that dude. And I couldn't even love my own wife. I'd like to take her to a motel, but I didn't know how to love. I had experienced something I'd never experienced before because self-centered, and the book said self-centered fear, that is my disease. That I have self-centered fear in all I do with my activities is to feed my own omnipotence and my self-centeredness. but I don't know how to love. I don't know how to give of myself. I'm afraid to touch. I'm afraid to touch. I do this, but I'm afraid to touch because I can't give of myself. And I never knew that. How'd you like to be sober and find out you hadn't gone anyplace? I still say it takes 5 years in AA to reach the bottom. You know. 5 years. At least. And then a guy finds out that what he's been doing is his activity. Man, I could talk about activity. I must have gone to, 90 meetings a week. I never went. As a matter of fact, somebody asked me to be the speaker up in Tehachapi one time, and a speaker at the motion picture group on Sunday. I got there at 8:25. No, nothing to eat. And I said, "Hey, Eddie, I'm here." He said, "Oh, my God, Activity, 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 activity." As my wife so beautifully put it this morning, I forgot about programs. someone once said, if you take the first step and the 12th step, all you're doing is carrying the disease, not the message. You know what I mean? And I don't know that. I don't know that. And somewhere along the line, I began to find out that what really counted was what I didn't know. And tonight, after all this time, I'm pushing 29. And the thing that excites me is what's going to happen and what I don't know. Not what I do know. What I know doesn't mean anything. There are people in the world who've known that all along. There isn't anything that I know that somebody else didn't know already. But what I don't know, that's fascinating. That's fascinating. And the thing about being sober is that it's an expanding program. It's a true psychedelic. You grow and you change and you grow. And then those of us who don't like pain, we don't stay. But those of us that'll stand still when it hurts and share and talk with some other alcoholic who's had some himself or herself, then all of a sudden it happens again. A new awareness, Someone once said AA is sort of like, there are periods where you got to walk down long hallways looking for that new door to open. And you can't open the new door until you close the old door. And I have a baby of mine who put it, I've never thought of it that way. He lives up in the city of Camarillo. He said, I finally learned that when I'm in the hall, at least I sweep. And then when I get to the door, there are two doors, and one says pain and one says joy. The alcoholic in me wants to go for joy, not for pain. And I've had joy and almost died. So I reach for pain, and I find joy. How are you going to explain that to anybody? That I've got to have the pain and not run away, because if I don't have some pain once in a while, and if I don't realize that I'm not really anything, then I can take over the universe, and I don't need God. Hell, Well, I need God for it. I got me, baby, And without whatever it is that runs this universe, and without you, I know what I am. I'm going to be flushed. Guaranteed, I will be flushed. Away from you for many periods of time, I would immediately revert back to nobody loves me. Nobody cares, I have a tendency now. My wife has a tendency to have anger, which I think is much more sophisticated. Mine is I pout. I suck my thumb, sit in the corner and hold a turd in my hand. Of course, there's nothing wrong, nothing wrong. Silence, that's what I do. I'm silent. And I remember the program tells me that this is a program about today. Surrendering and working the program is like going to the bathroom. Best done daily. So I remember, I say, God, help me, help me, God, help me, help me. God says, drop the turd, Ed, we'll talk. What I'm trying to say is that there's no cure for what I have. It's only recognition. And I'm no better than anybody. And if I wasn't with you, I'd be worse than I am. The only reason I'm better than I am is because I stick with you. And at least after 29 years, I've cut down. I only go to about 5 or 6 meetings a week. Most of those participation, I try to keep this down to an absolute minimum. Absolute minimum. I like to go out and talk on Well, even now it's 3 times a week, which is ridiculous. But I keep it down to a minimum. Reason is because I like to have experiences, If I talk all the time and don't have any experiences, then all I'm doing is talking all the time. And I'm not having experience, what the hell am I going to talk about, except I'm just blowing myself. But if I'm having experiences, then I've got something to share. I've got something to share, And I've had some good things happen to me sober. I was repossessed once. 2 cars at once. I've been divorced twice. Bankrupt. All that good stuff happened to me. But the message in all of this doesn't make any difference. I'm here. It's like saying, okay, God, I've done that. Now, what do you want to do now? What are you going to do now? I'm your kid. What do you want me to do now? And the amazing part of all this is there's joys in the wings. Because for every ounce of pain that I've had in Alcoholics Anonymous, I have had a pound of pure, unadulterated joy. Then I met Jim. You know, I was not looking for Jim. Take all the women in the world, all ages, and line them up, and let me take a look at all of them. I'll pick the wrong one every time.
Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the podcast. Sobercast is ad-free, and we'd like your help in order to keep it that way. So if you'd like to help us be self-supporting by pledging $1 or $2 a month, visit Sobercast.com and look for the donate links. Thank you very much.